We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We love gravy. It's the Parkinson Spiegel Show. Thank you for hanging out with us. Shane, Tanny, the whole mob is here. Get your questions in. Text them. Twitch them. We'll end the show with your questions for one last thing. Hasn't been an update in a while, Spiegs, on the Tiger Woods story. If anyone's just getting in their car and hasn't heard the news, Tiger Woods involved in a single car accident this morning in California, suffered multiple leg injuries, had surgery earlier today, non-life-threatening injuries. The LA Times reporting that Tiger Woods was traveling at a high rate of speed, went across the median. Car, after flipping multiple times, stopped 30 yards off the road, and they had to extract him through the windshield with the Jaws of Life tool to get him to the hospital. So again, non-life-threatening injuries, but no update on the severity of the injuries other than that they did require surgery for Tiger Woods.
That is jarring news if you're just getting it. It was jarring for us to hear it and slowly realize it was real, frankly, at the beginning of this. And it led early on to a lot of big picture thinking about Tiger and his import to our culture and sports, and thinking about his sports imprint as a golfer, what he has done for his sport and his cultural imprint. Like, it just he cast a big shadow over popular culture for a lot of these last 20-25 years. But it's not, thankfully, we don't have to go into full eulogy thought process, but we went there for a moment because the news early on was really scary. And
and you know, who knows, man? Like, he'd had five back surgeries, and we'll get to the Zach LaVine and All-Star stuff in just a second, or a couple minutes, whatever. But the All-Star reserves, the show will start at TNT on TNT at 6 o'clock when the coaches will announce the reserves. So we'll find out if Zach LaVine made the All-Star team coming up in a little bit more than an hour. But it was a impact on the sport. Like, if he does never play golf again. Right. So obviously the most important thing is he's got kids and his life. But if he does never play golf again, it'll be interesting to think about, has a player in modern history, like since the rules of these games have been basically set, you mentioned Kareem Abdul-Jabbar earlier, right? And all the rules that they had to change in basketball.
You know, that was college hoops. They stopped allowing dunking in college hoops because certain players, mostly Lew Alcindor, were just making a mockery of the sport.
But I can't think of a modern transformation of a sport that could be tracked more to a single athlete than Tiger Woods and golf. Few things. One, like we talked about earlier, the physical fitness component of it. Back then, guys looking like John Daly was a much more common occurrence. And then all of these young golfers come up with nutritionists and physical fitness and yoga and all of that stuff. And so they hit the ball further. So then in response to that, there was a thing for a while about tiger-proofing courses. So golf course design changed completely because of Tiger Woods. Bunkers were put out further, fairways narrowed, a premium on accuracy off the tee, all of that stuff. And then the money that flowed into the sport as a result of it, as a result of the sponsorships that he brought and the ratings and the eyeball and the people who liked to watch golf on TV wasn't just like the white country club goer. All of a sudden it became more mainstream, where now you finish third at a tournament and you could clear $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what I mean? So just multi-million dollar purses for non-major events. He just completely changed the economic landscape of the sport. We're now the 30th ranked golfer in the world has a bunch of sponsors and flies to every tournament on a private jet because Wheels Up is or Next Jets is one of his sponsors. Like, he just completely changed every single thing about modern golf. It's as much as the diversity component for golf, which, you know, it still has a long, long way to go, and he was instrumental in that, and the sport and the athleticism, the money, man. He just completely changed the game, changed it.
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting conversation to think about that, and I think Lew Alcindor absolutely ends up on that list. I mean, it's going back a while, but, like, Johnny Unitas was the first quarterback of the kind of quarterbacks we still talk about. Like, he absolutely revolutionized the quarterback position in terms of the volume of throwing and just how often to do it. That changed the game pretty dramatically. But Tiger's absolutely there. I forgot that the dunk was outlawed for 10 years, man, in college hoops. 10 years after 67 when Alcindor and UCLA won the first of what? And maybe that wasn't the first. What did UCLA win? 8 straight?
They won 9 of 10, right?
Celtics was 10 of 12. Celtics and Bill Russell et al. Was 10 of 12. UCLA, I want to say, was 8 straight. You might be right, 9 of 10. I know they won 88 straight games at one point until Bill Walton's UCLA team was beaten by young Digger Phelps and Notre Dame.
Seven straight national titles. Amazing. And 10 titles in his last 12 years for John Wooden at UCLA.
Oh, so it is 10 of 12. So is the Celtics also 10 of 12? It's interesting that certain things stick in the memory like that. But no, it's certainly true. What Tiger did, changed. Gretzky changed hockey, man. Nobody really ever set up behind the net like Gretzky did. And that, and just the volume of scoring and playmaking, it just, the numbers just exploded into a stratospheric place from him and him alone for a while.
8 straight for the Celtics from 59 to 66. Also won in 68 and 69. Also won in 1957. So that would be 11 titles in 13 seasons for the Celtics from 57 to 69.
Texture says Wilt Chamberlain made a mockery of the sport, not Jabbar. Well, Alcindor created a rule change. But you're right that Chamberlain at Kansas is like, what? Huh? Somebody 7 feet tall can do this? What? And then the Chamberlain numbers still in NBA parlance are just absurd. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absurd.
Point, but just again, modern, it's hard because all of these games have evolved, right? Golf's been around for so long. Basketball, these sports have been around for so long. But as a guy who broke onto the scene professionally in golf in 1997, he was winning U.S. amateurs and all of that before that. But that is relatively modern. Like, I cannot think of an athlete from the 90s to now who changed their sport more than Tiger Woods. And because people are saying, like, Federer or Serena, those are individual sport athletes who had a run of dominance similar to or greater than Tiger Woods. But, like, Roger Federer did not inherently change the rules of men's tennis in a similar way that Tiger Woods changed the rules of how golf course design, golf club manufacturing, the money in the tournaments, all of that stuff. Like, I just, like, again, the exercising in the sport, it's just, I personally don't think there's a modern 21st century comp.
In terms of tennis, you know, a similar sport in that in terms of an individual and the transformation, actually Martina Navratilova was a serve and volley woman when nobody was. Nobody. It was like everybody was Chris Evert, just hitting like tons of ground strokes. Very, very infrequent to serve and volley. And she was a serve and volley and played, a powerful, very, very strong version of the game that was new to women's tennis way before Serena and others.
Yeah, I certainly don't know as much about tennis as I do golf. I just think it's a weird thing, man. It's a weird thing to consider. I obviously hope he's able to make it back and have another comeback. He's overcome a lot physically already. But Like, that guy deserves to be, even if he's not winning. Like, I want Tiger Woods playing at the Masters for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you would see that all the time, whether it be Gary Player or Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer. Those guys would get in on their exemptions, and they would play, and they wouldn't make the cut, but they'd be there. And there was something about having them at Augusta and having them at these majors. So I really hope that Tiger Woods is able to get back and do that.
I agree. Put this in your back pocket. I don't bring it up a lot because we don't talk about it a lot, but I love tennis and could do hours of tennis conversation, the history of tennis. I grew up playing it. My parents played it. Then I played varsity in high school and college. And like you just brought up Federer, and it's like there are three guys, Federer and Nadal and Djokovic who over the last 10 years, all three of them could lay claim to being the greatest of all time. That is insane. In an individual sport, to have three guys overlapping like this, playing against each other at all these different times, and any of the three over like a multiple year period could lay claim to being the GOAT of their sport. That's pretty rare.
Do you watch tennis tournaments?
Sometimes I do.
I've just never heard you talk about like present day tennis or seeing you tweet about it. I'm not saying that you don't, but
yeah.
I knew you played it back in the day, but I did not know that you had an appreciation for the modern tennis game. I only know about tennis what I know through watching the majors occasionally in the finals and the golf, the gambling odds.
I don't watch non-majors anymore, but you can count me in for breakfast at Wimbledon. You can count me in for the French Open and those finals. Well-versed in those surfaces and who's been the best of all time on those surfaces and just watching.
Nadal's good on clay.
Yeah, thank you. And Nadal against Federer, they've had two or three. One of them, I think it was 2009, was like one of the greatest matches I've ever watched, a 5.5-hour match where I was locked in for every moment. So, you know, there's a lot in the history. And I grew up on Connors and McEnroe and Ilie Nastasi and Yvonne Lendl and Boris Becker, which is why he came up in the Flula Borg segment. And that's why we will always do tennis. Just hours and hours of tennis. And, of course, my legendary tennis playing with the Menendez brothers in 6th and 7th grade.
I've heard that story.
Yes.
I like that story quite a bit. So, anyway, that's the Tiger Woods news of the day. I know there's a press conference going on now where they'll do some sort of updates, and we will have any of the pertinent news that comes from that as we go. But I was reading Zach Lowe, and I know you said you don't have ESPN Plus yet. I personally think that ESPN Plus is a great buy, but it sucks for a lot of people who aren't going to pay for another subscription service because ESPN has moved their premium writers behind the paywall unless it is like serious breaking news short content, right? So if Passan breaks a trade, the little blurb story will be out there on ESPN.com, but Passan's 20 questions column is behind the ESPN Plus paywall.
Yeah, and Buster Olney's standard is behind there. A lot of, you know, Woj stuff now is behind there. Zach Lowe is now behind there. Now, I know. I pay for The Athletic. You have to pay for everything now. And I get it. I get Rolling Stone. I just tried to read a story on Rolling Stone about Daft Punk. I have to pay for that if I want to go back and read that.
Got to pay for premium content. And so I think ESPN Plus is a good deal. You can get bundles with it, especially if you like watching UFC fights. It helps on the pay-per-view cost. So I think there's a lot of good stuff with ESPN Plus. And to me, a lot of valid criticism of ESPN. But to me, I got to read Barnwell for football. Yeah. I read everything that dude writes. I got to read Zach Lowe for the NBA, got to read everything he writes, and then I got to read Passan for baseball. So I do think that they employ arguably the top writer in all three sports. But Zach Lowe, he wrote this column on his All-Star ballot, and he had a ballot that counted for the starters. Media gets a say in that, like the fans do and the coaches and the players. But the coaches select the reserves. So his ballot doesn't matter. But I thought it was interesting to hear what he says about Zach LaVine because it makes it a lot more nuanced than many of the local conversation, which has been, Zach LaVine's been amazing, put him in the All-Star game. First, he writes at the top of the story, I'll be honest, choosing between Middleton, Van Vliet, LaVine, Randall, Vucevic, Young, and Butler was impossible. Pick two names from a hat. He ends up doing his breakdown on all of those different dudes. He gets down to the last two spots. he picks Julius Randle for one of them. And so now of Chris Middleton, Van Vliet, Vucevic, Trae Young, Jimmy Butler, he ends up picking Zach LaVine for his last spot. But this is, and reading on the radio, whatever, but I think it's one of the best NBA writers. Here it is.
Yeah, give it to us. And I'll, if it's great to hear the context, too. Vucevic is a badass, man. A lot of those guys. And so it's great to hear the company that Zach's keeping, and I'm looking forward to hearing why Zach Lowe did choose Zach LaVine over those guys.
I have been lower than consensus on LaVine, and some issues persist. He tosses away too many turnovers. There is at times something frenetic and twitchy about his off-the-bounce game, almost as if he's playing solo, moving in ways that confuse teammates. He still ball watches some on defense and commits occasional gaffes that are unrecoverable, fatal back cuts, miscommunications, ducking screens against good shooters. These Bulls, like every prior LaVine team, have been better with LaVine on the bench, though the margin is shrinking of late. The same is true for Vucevic this season, though it does not seem a disqualifying factor for him. But the scoring and shooting numbers cannot be discounted. LaVine is averaging almost 29 points on ludicrous shooting, 43% on threes, 58% on twos. He is one of the league's half dozen most explosive cutters. He's calmer making plays. When teams trap him, LaVine slips more easy passes to Thaddeus Thaddeus Young, hat tip Stacey King, and Wendell Carter Jr., and watches as the Bulls spray the ball around. Young has been Chicago's second best player. The Bulls have outscored opponents by 9.8 points per 100 possessions when Young and LaVine share the floor. Some of LaVine's bad on-court, off-court splits have to do with teammates, with LaVine starting alongside an ever-changing cast of unproven guys as the usual suspects nurse injuries. LaVine is still a minus defender, but he has been more diligent. His rotations are a little crisper. He works one-on-one. He can be a vertical presence at the rim. That shows up in the advanced stats, which don't rate him much differently on that end, if at all, than Middleton, Vucevic, Trae Young, Bradley Beal, and others. For some, this spot will be between Trae Young and LaVine. Neither is helping on defense. It really comes down to Young's passing and free throws against LaVine's ultra-efficient shooting. Advanced stats lean Young. The Hawks still can't muster any offense when he sits. Their teams are about equal. I'll shrug and take LaVine. In a high-stakes playoff game, I'd prefer Van Vliet and Middleton to both. In choosing this season's All-Stars, I'm taking LaVine by the slightest of margins.
That was really good stuff, and enjoyed John Tesh's NBA theme underneath us.
It did help the reading. Thank you.
Absolutely.
How about Thaddeus?
That has also helped the Thaddeus Young conversation all freaking day long and in perpetuity. I love those last two sentences because that is understood about the All-Star game, and there's nothing wrong with that. That in a winning atmosphere, you'd rather have Middleton and or Van Vliet, but this is an All-Star game, and damn right that guy deserves it. That's excellent context all the way around.
And someone on Twitch says, does this dude watch every NBA game? That's why he's so good. He doesn't watch every NBA game. That would be impossible.
But he doesn't fake it, man. He does not fake it.
No, he constantly will just send out like a string of tweets and be like, just finish the rewatch of Magic Hawks. And then he'll send out like five thoughts from like scouting the tape himself. Like I have a passing level respect for that dude's ability to like actually cover the sport, watch games, be sourced, talk to people. Like he combines the analytics, his own scout's eye, the people that he talks to. So I take his word as near gospel when it comes to the NBA. I think he's great.
That was a great stat about Zach and Thad Young together, because those are the two best players right now. And what was it, about 9 points per 100 possessions?
Better, yeah, nearly 10. It was like 9.7 points per 100. Yeah.
Better than the opposition. Great stuff. Let me add a couple quick stats to that from Tom Haberstroh and then from MK Hoops, who were talking about it this today. Just with three-man lineups, and Tom Haberstroh's point, and he's very good too. I know you agree.
He is.
Haberstroh said that when LaVine plays with kids, it's ugly. When he plays with grown-ups, the Bulls are killing. Three-man lineups, LaVine, Kobe White, and Patrick Williams, their plus-minus is minus 110. LaVine, Garrett Temple, Thaddeus Young, it's a plus 86. So, like, that tells you how LaVine would fit in on a team full of grown-ups. And no disrespect to Kobe and P. Will. They just are who they are. And MK Hoops, Marquet, added to that, LaVine, White, Williams, and Markkanen and Carter as a five-pack is a minus 17.3 net rating. Levine, Satoransky, Thad, and Temple is a plus 34.9 net rating. And that's interesting to think about, you know, putting a guy in a team sport, in a complimentary team sport that has a great mix of the individual, of course, but put him with grown-ups and vets who do the right things, and they are better.
Dude, that's been my argument the whole time on Zach. Is like he is not the problem with the Bulls, and he's not surrounded by a point guard to make his life easier on that end, and he's still efficient, or B, just other good players at all. And so when you put him out there with a bunch of young dudes or guys who aren't good or whatever it is, it's very, very hard to carry it. Like he's a top 40 player with arguably not another top 100 player on the team. There are not many guys in that situation. It puts him in a very, very tough spot.
And he's entertaining as hell. Man, that guy can fly, and he will dunk with authority when the opportunity presents itself, but he's athletic and rangy, finishing around the rim in a variety of ways. His off-balance threes are works of art somehow because he elevates like crazy. The body control is impressive as hell. He's fun to watch as a scorer.
Two really fun pieces of audio from the same team that we have to get to before we go, one of which I think perfectly encapsulates why I think he's going to be Shane's favorite player this upcoming season. Next on The Score.
Why can't I be the MVP of the league? Why can't I be the best player in the league? I don't see why. Why can't I do that? I think I work hard. I think I dedicate myself to the game and sacrifice a lot of things at a young age. And I know that if I continue to, like, do good, like, what I can get out of it.
That was an incredible moment from Derrick Rose, who called his shot at Media Day before the season when he went on to become the youngest MVP in the history of the league.
Seriously, man.
So cool.
It's an all-timer. It's an absolute all-timer. And you know who was listening when that got played on The Score, and probably all year long listening to conversation as that dude went out and backed it up and played that way? Ayo Dosunmu of the University of Illinois. That was his guy, and he was a scorehead along with his dad. And I'm forever going to think of those guys linked in that way since we got to know Ayo last week as we did. That is a Chicago point guard child of Derrick Rose's influence with The Score as a remora fish to the Shark.
I loved it too, and it was part of the legend of Derrick Rose, man. It was like, yep, this guy, just the confidence, because he didn't talk a big game, you know, to hear him say something like that, yeah, stood out, and it, yes, was mocked and ridiculed, and then he went out and he backed it up, and it was just like, oh, this dude is just cut a different way. Like that, it was just a very clear line of demarcation of like, oh, we shouldn't be underestimating this guy because he's quiet or he doesn't talk a lot or he doesn't have the formal education. Like, we shouldn't be underestimating him in the way that many people did.
Yes, and the conversation surrounding him and his game was, he needs to be more selfish. He needs to be more aggressive. That was the context, was like, look at it objectively. You are the best option. Go, attack, 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 go. It was urging him, like, and it was like, can somebody learn to be an alpha? That was the conversation. And then he goes out and puts up that year and wins MVP.
So why did we come back with that random clip from Derrick Rose? Because Eloy Jimenez called his shot in a very similar way. He didn't say this year, and neither did Derrick, but just listen to how Eloy's talking about his game and what he can do.
I feel like when they say Abreu is the MVP of the American League, I was crying. You know why? Because I know the work he put in every day. I know that he worked hard every single day, no matter how he feel. And I feel proud of him, you know. He's a really good leader, and I think he deserved it.
And what about you, Eloy? You and individual sort of honors, whether it's All-Star or an award, is that part of what you think about going into a season? Is that one of your goals?
That's my goal every single year, you know. It's to, you want to get better, and you want to be payback, you know. And I think one day I'm going to be the MVP. I don't know what year, but I think it's soon.
I love that, man. Good for him. He thinks he's going to be the MVP one year, and he thinks it's going to be soon. That's Eloy. And, yeah, just thanks, Cubs.
Thanks, Cubs!
Yeah, I can see
it. Going to need a lot of bombs if you're Eloy, you know, because of your lack of defensive ability. Part of the Abreu thing was the genuine improvements in the defense and his importance overall as a team and his stature as a leader, all of that was part of it. For Eloy, if Eloy were to win an MVP, what would it take? 60 homers, I think, this year.
Yeah, the number I was going to say was 50, but yeah, but 60 would do it.
50 if it came with a real good OPS and a lot of RBIs and other good peripherals and they won the division, yeah, he'd absolutely have a shot. Pretty rare to have teammates go back-to-back. That hasn't happened very often. Wonder when the last time that happened was.
I don't know when the last time that happened is.
We There's do have no way to know.
A little bit of breaking news. Shams Charania has scooped the All-Star game, and Zach LaVine made it. So Zach LaVine is an Eastern Conference All-Star reserve. James Harden, Julius Randle, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Zach LaVine, Ben Simmons, and Nikola Vucevic have made the All-Star team in the Eastern Conference. Good for Zach, man. He set it as a goal. He talked about his respect. He added to his game. He's putting together one of the all-time efficient scoring seasons in NBA history, averaging over 28, 5-5 on over 50% from the floor, 40% from three, and 80% from the line. Larry Bird did it three times. Steph Curry did it once. Kevin Durant and Zach LaVine doing it this year.
That Put him in the Hall of Fame! Put him in the Hall!
Not the Hall of Fame, but that's the list. So Zach LaVine is in. And
COVID-19 is still out there.
Yes. So
that's amazing.
No fans, but good for Zach.
But that
man.
Will not derail our baseball conversation.
Yeah, we'll get to the other baseball audio in a second. It'll be a fun game, man. Like I know there was a lot of like, will there be a game? Should there be a game because of COVID-19 still being out there?
Baby.
You know, I've told you this before. It's my guilty sports pleasure. I love it. I hope the guys still go and play and live it up and show it out. But Zion Williamson also making the All-Star team in the Western Conference. He's been on an absolute tear recently, scoring like 30 on 67% from the floor and just playing ridiculous. So first of many for Zion Williamson, which will be one of the biggest stories of All-Star weekend.
Who are the other first-timers? Julius Randle's a first-timer, right? Good
yeah,
good
dude,
for him.
Talk about a star turn that I did not see coming.
Me too, man. I absolutely did not see that coming. Is that Vucevic's first?
Vucevic's first and Jaylen Brown's first as well.
That's tremendous. And Zach, good for him. And it is almost impossible to really take stock of the difference a year makes from All-Star game to All-Star game for that franchise. Insane. I mean, they're a playoff team with a respected front office, an incredibly respected head coach, and a all-star, and a deserved kind of no-brainer all-star on the roster after being only represented at last year's all-star game by the fact that it was here.
Right. You know? Well, because, I mean, he took it as disrespect. Like, they were like, can you do the dunk contest again? He's like, man, I've won it twice. What are you talking about, dunk contest? And so he did the three-point shootout. And, so there it is. He's now been in the three-point contest, the dunk contest twice, and now for the first time, Zach LaVine is an NBA All-Star. One more year on his deal, and then he'll be talking about a max contract. He's been saying he's wanted respect in two ways. All-Star game is one. Max contract is coming up next. You had some Dallas Keuchel audio that I know you wanted to get to. As we talk about the fun stuff and like the interesting audio from the Chicago White Sox, who are by far the best team in Chicago.
Always on the lookout for things that matter from Cubs camp and White Sox camp between now and opening day. You will be inundated with news, tidbits, items, and you'll wonder what matters. This one actually escaped me at first yesterday in talking about Michael Kopech's impending probable bullpen usage. We talked about Carlos Rodon saying, I was pretty much promised a starting spot or assured that he was going to get a shot for a starting spot. That's a big deal and means number five's kind of taken there. But how about when the outspoken veteran leader starting pitcher pretty much says what he thinks would be good for both the player, Michael Kopech, and the entire team? Thank you very much.
I just watched his bullpen the other day, and it's kind of just an effortless 97, 98. I mean, and just to have the luxury of a few guys in the upper 90s to the three-digit area code is unbelievable. So, if everything goes right, we have about 7-8 starters, and that's a great thing to worry about. Now, if everything kind of hits the fan and something goes awry, we still have a few extra guys. So that's good for us. And I don't think the White Sox have been in that position for a very long time. So we'll see. I mean, now the last couple of years, I mean, you see how valuable relievers are, the bridge guys who are coming in, who are guys back into the bullpen, guys coming in the fifth, sixth inning to get a starter out of a situation or face 1-2-3. So I don't really think, in my opinion, there's any difference for Michael this year in the bullpen or starting. In my opinion as well, I think that he would be better suited in the bullpen for maybe an inning or two, and then you can kind of vary his innings to match to what you want to give him for a full season. And then obviously, if we're playing 20 games in the playoffs, they're going to have to add those extra innings on as well.
Do you say that because of the idea of limiting innings or counting innings rather, that's why you think he'd be better suited for the bullpen? They could use him in different areas.
Yeah. Like I said, this is only my opinion. I mean, I have no idea what the plan is. I know that our training staff, our medical staff is very, very good. It's one of the best in the league. So I will definitely give them props for what they do. But if you put him as a starter and he only throws a couple innings at a time, you're really taxing the bullpen on that start date. So I would rather see somebody else start if they're going to go five or six innings, bring Mike in for an inning or two, and then start adding his innings up to where, hey, you got an inning or two at a time. Let's focus on those two, and then everybody else fills in the last two innings or something like that, because we potentially have a couple guys that are going to be going one or two innings for various days throughout the week. And that's better suited than having a starter only go a couple innings and then everybody else has to fill in six, seven innings.
I think that's totally reasonable.
So do I.
Everything he just said.
So do I.
It's totally reasonable.
It's just a lot. This is what's in the best interest for Michael Kopech, in my opinion. Also, this is what's in the best interest for the entire team, in my opinion. It is a level of comfort and authority that Dallas Keuchel is kind of known to have and bring to the table, but didn't really bring last year. I mean, last year was weird, and he was feeling out the process, and it was a manager he was fitting in with, and the whole thing was weird, and eventually he said some stuff about guys showing up every day, and he stepped up. But this is like, I'm just going to tell you what I think about everything. And I think he's completely, completely right, completely on point. But it's a lot, isn't it? It's to tell you this specifically what's right for the guy and what's right for the team. Would you, as Michael Kopech, be okay if your teammate talked about all of that? What if you harbored starting dreams still here on February 24th?
I just don't think that's reasonable, man. Like, if we know that he's going to be on an innings limit, making him a starter from day one doesn't seem to be a feasible thing. So
I agree, but that's not what I asked you. Would you be okay with that? It's me going down the human, getting inside my feeling sensitivity place. You okay with that?
Yeah, yes, I think so. I mean, it's tough to profile like what Michael Kopech is and is not okay with, but he strikes me as a guy who right now is like just happy to be there, and like the opinion of a more respected teammate who clearly has a spot in the rotation when we don't know yet if he has a spot in the rotation, and it's looking like the answer to that is no based on what they said about Rodon.
Yeah.
Man, my guess is Michael Kopech's role is not a secret to Michael Kopech, you know? So I can't imagine he hears that and he's like, what? I might not be a starter. This is news to me. Like, that just doesn't strike me as being very likely. But I'm with you. Like, that is an unusual amount of candor for a player saying what he thinks the role of another player should be on the team before the person who actually determines that role has weighed in on what said role would actually be. Like, yes. Tony La Russa hasn't said it yet. Rick Hahn hasn't said it yet. But Dallas Keuchel has. I agree with you. The timeline is a little funny there. But I don't think he's out of pocket, because I think that's exactly what is going to happen.
Hey, if the White Sox are known for anything this offseason, it's the awkwardness of timeline of public comments. So
yeah, does Rick Hahn have a PDF Michael Kopech plan and is putting it in his recycle bin on his computer after he hears that?
Was Rick Hahn standing next to Dallas Keuchel looking like a hostage as Keuchel was talking about Kopech's role right there?
Yeah, I thought that was like a very classic example of ask a question, get an answer.
I agree. Okay. And I love it. I want more of it. We don't get it that often.
It becomes jarring.
Yeah, it becomes jarring. And veterans are, you know, veterans who feel that comfy are few and far between, frankly. So good. So thank you, Dallas. Keep talking.
One last thing. We answer your questions next on The Score.
It's time for one last thing.
That is the $1.5 billion question.
I just want to ask you one question.
That's a general answer to a general question.
Ask any question.
I just want to ask you.
For anyone on the
one
show.
Question.
You know, there's times where I don't want to answer your guys' dumb questions.
I just want to ask you one question.
What do you think about verb?
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Jesus.
I just want to ask you one question.
I respect the question and I totally get why you're asking it, but
I just want to ask you one question.
One of the biggest questions that people will ask in these type of situations.
I just want to ask you one question.
One last thing with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
That was a combination of hip-hop and salsa.
Zach LaVine is an all-star. If you missed the news, we end the show with your questions. We call it one last thing. You could Twitch them. Search 670 The Score on Twitch. You could text them, 312-644-6767. The Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Shane, what questions do we have today?
From MPAT75 for everybody, cake or pie?
Pie.
Oh, cake. Cake.
Cake.
Nope.
All depends. If it's like a bundt cake or like a lemon loaf, then it's cake. But anything else, pie.
I mean, French nothing. Silk pie, you know, trumps all of it.
Yeah, it's the worst one. You're right.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Nothing bundt cakes. Those cakes are freaking ridiculous.
I love a dense bundt cake.
Yes. And my brother, who's a chef and has a very refined palate, always told me that white cake, white frosting. Just really, really good white cake with white vanilla frosting. That's how you can tell if it's really great. And that is my favorite, must say. Man.
Apple pie with ice cream. It's so damn good. Pumpkin pie with some whipped cream on Thanksgiving.
Do you like an apple pie with a crumble, or are you more of a traditional pie crust topper?
I like both, honestly. Like, I have more of a pie crust topper as my normal go-to. But if there's a crumble on top, it's like a nice, pleasant surprise. It's a bonus. It's the ambidextrous gravy on top of the pie, if you will. Next question.
From Parkins Mic Stand. Tanny, how much work do you do outside of work? And are you working all your magic with audio while you're there listening to the show as well?
Oh, I don't know if I should answer this question on the airwaves. I don't think people would be happy.
Happy? I mean, I think it shows dedication to your craft.
I mean, it is, yeah. But, I mean, I work on the show a lot in the morning, but the good thing about this job is I can do all my audio stuff at any time I like. So, like, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and, like, oh, I can't sleep. Like, I need something to, you know, it's a creative outlet, right? So I'll work on show stuff in the middle of the night sometimes, but usually right when I wake up in the morning after I get my daughter ready for school, I'm getting after it, like, by 8:15 at the latest usually. And, you know, still commute here, so I build in time for that. And, yeah, sometimes during the show I'll, you know, grab a piece of audio or whatever, but, yeah, it's a full-time gig, man, but it's fun. So
I love that you refer to it as a creative outlet, that's the way it feels to you, because that's the quality of it. Certainly comes off that way.
Aw, so. Thanks.
We compliment Tanny enough here, but seriously, he is literally always working. He is always, always working. It's exhausting.
I've never been happier, though, uploading stuff from home.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That is great.
Yep.
Good, man.
Okay, here's one, another one from Parkins' mic stand. I'm reading this one without screening it first.
Good luck.
What is the general relationship like with the staff and on-air talent up the dial and the score? Imagine Salute. All you guys network with each other, but I have no idea as just a listener.
I don't want to speak for... I don't know that there's like a general relationship. I think other people just have different relationships. Like, I used to intern at that radio station and filled in there over... Like, I would come home for like the Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, and fill in and do shows up there. So I know all of those guys, have fine relationships with them. Probably have the most relationship with Cap. I know I've known Yurko for a long time. Didn't really interact with Waddle or Sylvie because they were always off when I was filling in. Carmen's always been nice to me. Like, you know what I mean? I know all of them, though. But so I have good relationships with all of them.
Carmen and Sylvie have always been very friendly to me, and me back to them. I don't really have relationships. Yurko and I were in a fantasy football league for like 9 years together and enjoy each other and have texted frequently. Cap worked with a bunch. And Johnny Hood is one of my dudes, man. That guy, like, he and I came up together at the score back in the day. It's all anecdotal, right? It's all individual. Randy Merkin and I happened to work at Sporting News Radio together for 3 years. So you never know.
Yeah, some of the guys I know better are the producers, like Zetterman and I, or Merkin and I, those guys. Adam Delavitt, he's no longer there. But the guy had the question about networking, too. There is some of that. Like, you know, if you're a lawyer in Chicago and you leave your law firm, there's a 500 law firms that you can go to. If there are two sports radio stations in the city. So if you want to do sports radio in Chicago, unless you're Mac, like, you can't really burn a bridge and then, like, walk back across it. So you kind of have to keep those avenues open at all times, unless you want to move your family. So I like them. I respect them. And when I get fired from here, I hope they will take my calls. But yeah, obviously for now, we're also competitors. And so we're trying to continue to win.
Yeah. All those guys who I said I like personally, I think they suck, just for the record. They absolutely,
of course,
suck.
Obviously.
And
yeah.
I would never listen.
Obviously.
That's it.
There was a good question that apparently we don't have time to get to about Speaks. If you could had to wipe out one, baseball or music, what are you wiping out?
Ooh, if I had to wipe out one from my life or existence on the planet?
From your life. Huh. You're done. You're done.
There's no way to know.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Do that?
Good question.
What am I, like, not never watch baseball, never listen to music?
Yeah, it's just over. One of them has to go.
Baseball.
Baseball's gone.
Yes.
Wow. Ending the show with some bad vibes, babe.
Hey, if I had to.
No, you had to. I understand. Get it. I thought it was an interesting question.
It is.
Vinny Goodwill was on the show today. He's fantastic, as always. So was Joel Corey. The picture he painted and what it would take just to get to the Allen Robinson franchise tag number was one thing. And then Allen Robinson and a veteran quarterback?
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of issues for Ryan Pace and the Bears. Not that we didn't know it, but he spelled it all out, and it was really good stuff if you want to listen. Middle of the 3 o'clock hour from earlier today. Once again, Zach Levine's an all-star. I know Joe will have more on that. Joe Ostrowski is coming up. Thanks to Brian Gertz. He runs the Twitch chat. Shane Reardon is our executive producer. Thank you, sir. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. The Iron Man streak hits lucky number 13 tomorrow.
Whew. Bam. Bam.
I am tired. He is Matt Spiegel. I'm Danny Parkins. This is Parkins and Spiegel on the Score.
All right. Thank God that's over. I got a headache. All right. So anyway, I got to be honest, Bill. That's just too much. That's over the top.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.